mean, it's been all right. It's been. I'm just jumping in, by the way.
Okay.
We are. I guess technically this is day two of me being quarantined, but Carter was tested Monday, and actually we just got his result back, which was negative. So hopefully that means we're all negative, but we'll see. So I'm staying home from work and getting put to work at the house.
Yeah, that's fun. I'm kind of in the same situation. So I got exposed last Friday. So, I mean, I took a rapid test yesterday, or maybe it was the day before, I don't remember. But that's when I found out that I got exposed. So I took a test. Rapid test says that I'm negative, but apparently under 7 days, it's not exactly reliable. So I have to wait till the PCR test comes in. So we'll see how that goes.
Oh, okay. How long did it take for you to get a test? Like, could you just show up at your rapid testing site and get tested, or did you have to wait like a day or two?
So because a couple of my friends had to get tested before, they found a couple of places where you can get tested as long as you set up an appointment ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So when I signed up, I got really lucky because I found an appointment like an hour later, but my friends signed up maybe like 10, 15 minutes after I did, and they could not find a spot for the next like 3 days. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, like it fills up really quickly sometimes. So you kind of like luck. Otherwise, I would have been in a line for like a walk-in spot for like 3 or 4 hours. So it's been getting kind of rough around here.
Yeah, that's. Did you have to have a script to get your test, or could you just walk up?
What do you mean, like a script?
Like a doctor has to like prescribe you to get the test.
No, I've actually never heard of anyone doing that before. So that's new to me.
Yeah, that's so. When Sage went to try to get it done, she signed up and everything, got there, and they're like, oh, well, where's your script to get this test done? She's like, what do you mean? That was not a prerequisite on the website or anything. She made the appointment and then got turned away. So she went to our family doctor the following day, got a test from them, and still waiting to hear back on that.
That's weird. I mean, I know some places don't take you if you don't have, like if you don't have symptoms or if you weren't exposed or like some other kind of thing, but I've never heard of a doctor having to prescribe it. So like, I know some places they require like certain things, but that's a doctor prescription is kind of new to me because you'd think that people want to get tested to prevent more instead of getting results later affecting more people, but that's dumb to me.
Yeah. And having to go to, you know, two different places, which I don't know, whatever. Maybe that's why I'm not in the hospital line of work or rep, whatever, pandemic prevention. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's not our realm of expertise anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah. So let's just hope everybody's stays negative. And I mean, I guess it's more time to be working on ball out stuff.
Yeah, no, but like this week has been really productive because I've had nothing to do but that. So it's been kind of nice. But speaking of ball out, let's just jump into our episode. So I'm kind of looking forward to this episode.
Yeah. We want to talk. I mean, it's something that we've touched on in the past. We want to just go a little bit deeper on it.
Yeah, like we've always like kind of skirted around it. We never really talked about it in depth. We've only just kind of like, oh, there's a difference between. So, by the way, episode's about like bodybuilding versus performance training. So we've always talked about like the names, like how train those athletes. You could really call them athletes in both situations. How they train their bodies differently. We always talk about they do, but we never talk about the why or the how. So that's what this episode will be really diving into. So I'm looking forward to it because it's going to be a kind of like a refresher course from myself and also a lot of people, because I know a lot of people don't know what they're doing. They just kind of know, okay, we're going to hit these reps, we're going to hit these sets, we're going to hit these numbers, and then just go home. There's not a lot of thought or, I guess, trying to think of preparation that goes in most of the workout. They just kind of go in the gym, get it done, and then leave. So there's not a lot of thought that goes into it.
Right. And what's very kind of, I guess, crazy is that most of the time it is bodybuilding workouts. And I know I've brought that up in the past where, you know, a lot of the cookie cutter, a lot of the like Instagram type workouts that you're going to get are more geared towards bodybuilding style of training.
Yeah, only thing is, like, I think honestly, a lot of it does blend together. There's, I would say, when it comes to like the weight room, a lot of it's very similar. Like, I will say that. But the thing is with performance training, there's a lot of other workouts that don't include weights, and that's where bodybuilders tend to not do because there's no need for them to do it. Like, if you think about explosive movements, if you think about Olympic lifts, if you think about cardio, like all those other aspects. Like, bodybuilders typically stick to the weights. They might do some cardio to burn a little bit of fat, but that's really all they do. They don't do much outside of that.
Well, right. But also, you look at how they're training the muscle as well. Mm-hmm. So, you get a bodybuilder. I mean, we'll just jump in with squats. So if you get a bodybuilder that's looking to do squats, he doesn't care how fast that weight comes up off the ground as long as it gets up. It doesn't train your muscles to be explosive. It trains your muscles to be more powerful, to have that endurance. And what bodybuilders are actually chasing is that, and I'm doing air quotes here, is the pump. So whenever you hear bodybuilders talking about that, about, you know, they want to get a good pump in, you know, their arms, or get a good pump in calves, whatever it is, all that is getting enough blood into that muscle to pop more muscle fibers. So the more muscle fibers that you are actually breaking, the faster that muscle is going to build bigger. And when that comes to performance training, that's not always ideal depending on what your sport is.
Yeah, the only time I would say that would be ideal for performance training is if you're in the off season, and let's say you're in like a power or a strength heavy sport like football, or I guess like Olympic throwers for track and field, or like kind of those big heavy explosive movements, but they require a lot of strength as well. Like, the off season is typically where in those sports you want to get bigger and stronger, so that's the only time you're gonna want to, I guess. They're not really ideally going for the pump, but they're going for the muscle mass, the hypertrophy training that we mentioned way back in like episode 2 or 3.
Yeah, that's been brought up like 2 more times, maybe. Just kind of, oh yeah, that thing.
Yeah, so if you don't remember what hypertrophy training is, go check it out. One of our episodes way back in the beginning. So just scroll all the way back to the top or the bottom, depending on what app you're using. And you listen to that episode about hypertrophy training. Yeah, I get it right when I'm in peak person. When I'm recording stuff, my words don't work. Anyway. But yeah, like I would say, that's the only time you really focus on like kind of that pump mentality where you really just want to get heavy weights up. You want to get them up. You don't really care too much about the pump per se, but you're really working on just trying to get that weight up, get it stronger, get bigger, get faster, stronger during the off season. Now, when it comes to the other seasons, so like the in-season training, postseason, preseason, those don't really matter as much. The off season is really where you're kind of matching that.
Yeah, and in the off season though, you're not really looking exactly at bodybuilding training. You're looking for like a powerlifting phase, then maybe do a short burst of like bodybuilding to make sure your muscle endurance is there, and then you're getting into that more performance training. But I wanted to break down just the body really quick, because it's this going to be difficult to explain, but bodybuilders are looking for a certain look. So a bodybuilder is looking for that X look through the body where you got nice wide shoulders and back, tiny waist, and then the legs get bigger at the bottom. Where that's not always ideal for performance training. Like we've brought up before, you know, the core is a very, very vital muscle group for athletics, for performance, and especially for dodgeball. So when a bodybuilder is looking at, you know, his overall physique, he's judging it based on how it looks in the mirror versus what it can do. And if he's looking at, you know, his shoulders and realizes that I really need to bulk up my shoulders, get really good, nice caps on my shoulders, that he doesn't care about a lot of the mobility. Yes, mobility will play a part, because the more mobile his shoulders are, the wider range of motion, the more muscle fibers he can tear in that range of motion and build a stronger muscle. But if a dodgeball player is looking at his shoulder and he sees that he wants bigger shoulders, but it's not necessary, maybe he can look more at working that range of motion and make sure that all of his arm slots aren't causing him any pain. So I think that's one big difference that we're looking at here is form over function.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like if you were to, like if you look at the average bodybuilder, like usually kind of the bigger guys in the gym that you kind of see where they can't move in certain ranges of motion, or they can do it in certain range of motion, but they're limited because of the muscle mass you have. So like, for example, like if you were looking at a guy that has massive biceps, he probably can't straighten out his arm because of that lack of range of motion, because all he cared about is just getting the muscle bigger, making it look good, and focusing on just those two things. Whereas if you look at a dodgeball athlete, sure, you might have like a nice size bicep for like the average person, but it's more about that mobility, like you said, is getting through that range of motion, especially for the throw. Because when you think about the throw, you want to be able to have as much range of motion possible, because the more range of motion, meaning you have more options, you'll be able to get more speed into your throw. If you have a low range of motion, it's very hard to move the arm at all and get into that range of motion. So it's very difficult.
Right. And another big thing is, you know, athletes need to develop, this is kind of what we touched on the last episode that I wanted to bring back up, was that rotational strength, the rotation and anti-rotational. So if you're a bodybuilder, you don't need that at all. All you're looking for is to get a lower percentage of body fat so that way your obliques will show up. But if you're an athlete, you want to build up your obliques and make sure that they're strong and powerful through a couple of different exercises that, especially dodgeball, that are going to help you with your throw, your recovery, some of the weird positions you might get in, either in the air or on the ground. Bodybuilders don't care about that. It's all about the look.
I mean, the thing is, like, when you look at, I guess if you're a video game nerd, if you look at stats in terms of bodybuilders versus performance athletes, typically for, what's it called? Performance athletes, they're going to have higher stats in all categories more often than not. There might be one category in terms of, like, I don't know, strength maybe. But that even that still probably used to be, like, pretty close in terms of bodybuilding. Bodybuilders only have one stat, it's probably going to be appearance. And even that's still a stretch because some athletes, you see them, they look, I mean, they're just the way they train their body, the way they take care of their bodies, some of them are pretty ripped and they're pretty kind of got that athletic build versus bodybuilding where you see literally every single muscle on their brain. So it's kind of like that differences because, like, again, like, so there's this video. I'm actually looking it up right now. I saw it a couple years ago, and it's actually kind of funny. So it's a group of bodybuilders versus a group of football, like, professional football players. And what they do is they take them through the NFL combine and show the differences between bodybuilders versus performance trainers. And the results are hilarious because, like, especially if you watch some of them do, like, the 40-yard dash, like when we talk about the lack of mobility in bodybuilders, it's hilarious watching them try to run because their legs don't move at all. So it's kind of like the different places. I highly recommend the video. I'll probably tag it when we post the video or this episode. It's honestly hilarious. It's a very short video, but it's just the differences between all of the movements that they're able to do, the strength that they're able to do. Because, like, football players, very strong. Like, I know one of their tests is to be able to do 225-pound bench press as many times as you can. Bodybuilders can probably do it for a couple of reps, but in terms of, like, endurance strength, the football player won by, like, a mile, and it was kind of not even close in terms of the amount of reps that they did, how much weight they were able to do. So it's very different in terms of what they were doing.
See, that seems crazy to me because I would think that, well, I guess it would depend on the actual weight used, but I would think that bodybuilders would have the better endurance just because they are doing a lot higher reps for more sets. I guess if you have a moderately heavy load that you're trying to move, then that makes sense. But I guess if I wonder what would happen if you put 135 in both their hands and see who could press it out more, because then I bet the bodybuilder would.
Yeah, I think it really depends on, like I said, like the weights, because, like, that's where I was kind of, like, iffy on strength, because If it comes down to like maximum strength, performance will always win. But if it comes down to endurance, it's kind of like hit or miss depending on the athletes that they're competing against and the bodybuilder that you're competing with. Because some bodybuilders are a little bit slender than others, and some of them are a little bit beefier than others. So like I think the beefier guys probably would have the endurance, while the slender ones may not have the strength for it. So it kind of just depends on what type of bodybuilding you're looking at. Because if you look at different, like, I guess, physiques of bodybuilders, like kind of the slender side, there's the giant, massive, rounder types. So it kind of depends on who you're kind of competing with.
Yeah, that I'm gonna break that down really quick just because it makes me laugh. But there's definitely different categories of bodybuilding. So there's the bodybuilding category where it is like the Phil Heaths of the world. I don't know if people know who that is, but or like the Rodney Colemans, or it's people that are trying to get as big as possible while staying as shredded as possible. So you want to be able to see every line of muscle fiber in this, I'm going to call him an alien, in this alien person. And it's got to be just a giant freak of nature, really. And then you have things like the classic physique, which, if Arnold was around now, he would be in that classic physique, because it is, you want to get huge, but you want to stay as symmetrical. You want to you want to have that really tight waistline, where a lot of the new era of bodybuilding is they get those distended abs that, you know, it looks like it's a gut, but it's just a weird distension. Where in the classic, you want to have a nice tight waist. You're doing different poses. You aren't getting as absolutely big as possible. You still need to have a good proportion, like, look. And then there's the physique, which does not take into legs at all. And it's just really who has the best beach body, really, from the waist up. So when you were talking about different bodybuilding styles or different categories of bodybuilders, you can see in the gym and start to recognize where they fall. And then you have things like power lifters, where they are just mass, where they need mass to move mass and look like mountains. So one of the best strongmen in the world right now is actually Thor, who plays the mountain in Game of Thrones, which I'm hoping a lot of people are familiar with. So that's a true power lifter. Yeah, like they do like the strongman. That's what I'm looking for. The strongman type of training and styles of nonsense that they do, like throw kegs over 20 foot poles. Yeah. It's weird. Okay, so that when we talk about, you know, the breakdown of those, a lot of the classics and the physiques, they do focus a little bit more on the mobility. And I believe strongmen do as well, just because they are doing a lot of unconventional lifts. So they need to focus on, you know, making sure that they're not injuring themselves, while, you know, us athletes, we need that, because we in dodgeball, like I said, are contorting our bodies into weird scenarios, weird poses, and you never know where you might fall into.
Yeah, I would say, like, I know there is, I'm trying to think of what I was trying to say, but like there's three, I guess, categories of like training. Like we kind of brought up like bodybuilding versus performance. And technically you can also include powerlifting as a separate type of lift, because they're all very different training styles. I mean, technically you can include Olympic lifting in there as well, but we're not going to include that right now, because that's kind of implemented in almost all three. But with those three different categories, like you can consider bodybuilders their own sport, because that's based on judging, that's a whole different realm. Then there's the performance athletes where they're kind of like traditional sports, where including dodgeball, or basketball, football, all those different sports be classified as performance. And then the power lifters, it's kind of like I kind of want to include them in performance training because they're doing explosive movements sometimes. They're doing, like you said, unconventional lifts. But I would consider them their own category because it's very different from performance training because there's really no cardio in powerlifting. So there's no like need to go run as fast as you can. All they're doing is lifting weight explosively as they can. So it's just focusing on the weight itself versus focusing on making your body, I guess, well-rounded as a performance athlete would.
Yeah, and this is actually so I should preface this that this all came out of a good place and then it just got taken very far left field. But this is where CrossFit was born. It was a blend of trying to take the best of every style. It was, you know, trying to get those great explosive Olympic lifts. It was trying to implement some powerlifting and also making sure you were staying a good athlete. You could move well, you were explosive. So the good intentions that came out of that were the basis of what is now CrossFit. And I think all those intentions are very, I shouldn't say that. All those intentions and ideals that were taken from the different styles came from a very good place. And how it evolved, not as much, because it took away the safety. It took away not enough knowledge of each pillar, I'll call it, each pillar of the training, and kind of started to contradict itself. So I know we did a whole episode on phasing and different, is that the word we used? Did we use phasing?
Yeah, we use phasing.
So we did a whole episode on phasing, and through that phasing, all of them are included. Where performance breaks off is it's an added phase. So if you are a bodybuilder, you go from stability to strength to endurance, and you really just fluctuate back and forth between that that endurance and the strength. If you are an athlete and you're looking for explosive strength, then you go one step further and you are trying to add power to that strength and endurance to be as explosive as possible and as powerful as possible with those explosions.
Yep. And that's honestly, like you said, that was spot on. That's the biggest difference right there, that last step. Because I think there's, depending on who you study under or who you talk to, there's about 7 steps. Like you said, stabilization step, then you move into muscular endurance, then you move into muscular strength, and then if you're, depending on again who you talk to, there's muscular power, and then you move your way into power endurance, power strength, and then I guess power. So they're different, you know. It's really dumb when you read it under a certain organization that explain it. But for the most part, most organizations will agree on, I guess, all of them, or just kind of more often than not with those different steps. So that's where performance athletes really strive. Is once you get into that power, or that power phase, that's really where your training starts. Because like if you look at it in the different phases of your training in terms of like what season you're in. So like if you're in the off season, you're really focusing on the strength aspect. When you're in the preseason, you're focusing on the power, and then in season it's just maintaining all of that. And once you get into the postseason, that's where you go back to stability and recovery. So that's really how the power athletes go. But with, like you said, with bodybuilding, they just stay focused on those first 2 or 3, where it's just stability, strength, and you can add in a hypertrophy as well, because depending on what types, like you said, different styles of bodybuilding, you might want to grow a lot of muscle mass as well. So It kind of just kind of goes back and forth with those 3. So there's really no need to be explosive and powerful for a bodybuilder.
Right. And let's bring in the splits and the volume differences that bodybuilding and performance athletes will look like either, I mean, in the weight room, I guess, really is the only one for bodybuilding, or going to like a field, or what kind of volumes, like set to reps and exercises, is a bodybuilder looking at versus a performance athlete?
Well, since bodybuilding is your realm, and I don't want to be completely wrong, I'm going to let you go with the bodybuilding part. I mean, I feel like I know the answer, but I'm going to let you go. You actually did bodybuilding. You spent time studying that.
All right. So the main thing with bodybuilding is you do want to get your compound movements down. You want to make sure your compound movements are solid, and like we said, just said, you know, you want to work through that strength, get those up, because those are going to be the exercises that get you to grow the fastest. Then once, you know, you do your compound lift for your day. So let's just say I'm doing chest. The bench press is always going to be, you know, number one. So getting my chest day in, start with bench, then maybe going over to incline. The biggest difference is after those, then it's all isolation movements where I am looking to just hone in on that mind muscle connection. And I'm trying to get every ounce of blood in my body to go into my pecs. And obviously I'm not just doing chest. I'd want to throw in some triceps and stuff as well. But that's the main thing is those isolation movements and doing a ton of them, not real heavy weight, but I want to use that motion. And if you're looking at a cadence, you were looking at a 1-2-1, which is one at the bottom, two to move the weight, one squeeze, and then down. So, you mean you can even stretch that to a 1-4-1, which is going to really start to burn. But that's how really your day is going to look. One heavy compound lift, and then isolation, isolation, isolation.
Yeah, but I definitely agree. And I was actually going to bring up the isolation part, but you brought it up for me. But yeah, like I noticed that like with bodybuilders, they typically will do more often than not, like especially like let's say you're doing arms, they'll do a lot of bicep curls, a lot of tricep extensions, and then do different exercises hitting the exact same muscles. But mm-hmm. Yeah, following it up with the compound lift. So quick tip for anyone that wants to kind of work out in general, you typically want to do compound lifts, meaning multiple muscle activation exercises. So like you say, chest press, or if you're doing pull-ups, rows, anything required in one or more joints is typically considered a compound lift because it involves multiple muscles. And you typically want to start with those because you're fresh. You're utilizing multiple muscles at the same time. So you're not burning out those isolation exercises first and then try to compound exercises when muscles are weak at that point. So you want to be productive right. Starting compound. But mm-hmm. Getting back to with bodybuilders, like you said, like they really just focus on isolation. Performance athletes, it's not that they're not doing isolation exercises, but they may not have a cadence to it and they're not doing nearly as many. They'll focus mostly on the compound movements and they'll try to keep most of the lifts similar to game movements. So Jumping exercises. Olympic lifts, while they're not typically movements that you do in a game, because it requires your whole body and it's explosive, they'll typically use those as well to kind of compare the differences.
Yeah, and like you said, that the performance athlete, isolation movements aren't going to be as important. They're going to be something that, you know, maybe if you see an imbalance in your throw and you want your chest to have a little bit more endurance throughout the day, then you go hit, you know, four sets of 12 on a chest fly or something. But really a performance athlete is doing, like you said, game movements. You are going to be doing a few of them, but as quickly and as explosively as possible. And then you're going to have a lot more rest in between. Yep. So that way your body has full recovery time in order for you to do that exact same movement perfectly. You don't want to train your body and this might, I don't know if this is in books or if this is just something that I feel. When you are training yourself and you are training yourself to fatigue and your form starts to break down, you don't want your body to get into that habit of, I'm tired, this is the form that I can expend right now, and it's just going to have to do. That's not something that I want to see people getting in the habit of. So I don't want to see people go all round robin, look good, strong, athletic, and then get tired and then get into bracket play and, you know, form and function just kind of go down the toilet because they're tired. You know, you need to have those long rests in between. So even if you are tired, you have the mental capacity to come back and do it perfectly. And that way, when you get into game scenarios and you are tired, you know, your mind has been there before. Like your mind knows, like, all right, we've been this tired. We still know how to do this. And it's just second nature. You don't have to think about it as much.
Yeah, I don't think that's in books, but I definitely have the same mindset as you. I don't think they teach you that anywhere. So I think that's just something you kind of develop as a trainer or someone that's mm-hmm. in fitness, because I usually tell most of my clients that if you start getting lazy in your workouts, especially when you're tired, that's when you're going to get hurt. Because I had a client roll her ankle. I mean, she wasn't tired, but she was kind of like not really focusing on what she was doing. So she was doing high knees and we were doing lateral high knees. So you're kind of going side to side while doing them, and she hit the foot, rolled it, and then she was out for about 2 weeks. So, it was a rough time, because that was my first injury on the job. Like, what do I do? Because it's been a while since this has happened. So like, you have that little mini panic attack. I'm like, oh, right, I know what to do. But it's never fun when it happens. So like, same thing will happen with athletes. Typically, when injuries happen, they usually just freak accidents. No matter if you're tired or not, it just happens. But you're the likelihood of getting injured when you're tired and not paying attention to your form, especially with a throwing motion as complex as it is, and you just like, maybe I'll just throw like a half-ass sidearm, and you're not used to doing sidearms ever, and you just feel something grinding your shoulder. It's like, well, that's gonna hurt for the next week or two. So you typically don't want to ever do that, like especially with your shoulders, like really any movement, but with shoulders, they're not that control that it is.
Yeah. I mean, I've been there several times where, you know, sometimes I'm dogging and, you know, I'm trying to get out of the way of a ball and I just don't think to pick my feet up, and, you know, I roll an ankle and it might not be bad because, you know, I have the wherewithal to catch it before I put all my weight down on the ankle, but it's so easy to happen. And I have done it several times where I just have to be like, know what I'm doing, know where I'm at in the game and in my, I guess, in my tiredness level. I don't know. Fatigue level. That sounds more smart.
That sounds about right.
In my fatigue level, and know that, you know, these little nuanced things are things that I need to pay attention to and make sure that they're executed correctly, or I might just be done for the day. And me personally would hate that.
For sure. Like, it's nothing worse than being like sloppy, and then you know you're getting sloppy, and it's like a never ending spiral. Like, hey, don't do this, but because you're tired, you keep doing it. So just nip in the bud early and just focus on what you're doing in the gym. Like, granted, like, depending on the workout you're doing, if you're tired, it's a little bit different. Like, if you're weightlifting and you're tired, don't lift the weight when you're tired, especially if you know your form going down. Because, again, that's how you get hurt. When it comes to like conditioning, it's a little bit different because I don't want to say form is not as important, but you can kind of get away with getting lazy with your form because your body is kind of like, for example, let's say you're doing like a shuttle run or like some type of running conditioning exercise. If you're running with sloppy form, the likelihood you getting hurt kind of low, but it can still happen. But when it comes to the lifting weights, especially if you're doing heavy weights, like let's say you're doing bench press or you're doing squats, where that weight can crush you. Focus on your form. Don't get lazy. Don't half-ass it. Take the rest you need in order to continue. I would say for conditioning exercises, if you're doing them, if you need a break, take the break. Like, the last thing you want to do is pass out in the middle of your run or have a really crappy rep when you can't breathe and you have to stop halfway through every time. So like you have to kind of build up your body in increments, and then get your as you get used to it, you'll be able to take it a little bit further, have another notch, but don't take it too far.
Yeah, let's talk about working in multiple planes, because that's something that bodybuilders never do. That's something, you know, bodybuilders stay in a single plane, where performance athletes are in all the planes all the time.
Yeah, that's a good point. So for the planes that we're talking about, for those that don't, there's three planes. There's frontal, which if you were to divide your body in half from front to back, so take a front half, take a body half, bottom half, and it's any type of lateral movement. So if you're thinking of it in movement types, lateral movements would be in the frontal plane. Sagittal plane is if you split your body left and right, and that'll be any movement that's going forward and backwards. Okay, and then transverse is any type of rotational movement. So whether you're rotating your shoulder, rotating your torso from left to right, so really any type of rotational movement is transverse. So those are your three. So again, frontal, sagittal, and transverse.
Yeah, so, and just to make that, I don't mean to cut you off, but I just want to make that imagery a little bit more clear. So that's like when he's saying that plane, it's like taking a piece of paper and putting half of your body. So say that frontal, that'd be like putting your butt and your back on one side of a piece of paper and your chest and your face on the other side of the piece of paper. So that just, and when you move, it'd be your arm coming along that piece of paper, not breaking out to the front or the back, but running along that paper.
Yeah. This is one of those.
Make it a little more clear?
A little bit. Like, this is one of those things where we need a, like a video podcast where we could like just demonstrate everything. It'd be so much easier. but we'll figure something out with that. But yeah, in terms of that, that's really the three planes that athletes will move through. So bodybuilders, they don't really need to go through all of that movement, because typically when you're lifting weights, you're only moving it either sagittally or maybe frontally if you're doing specific exercises. Like, I can't think of any exercises, but like mostly just sagittal when it turns to movement.
Yeah, it's really all bodybuilding. You know, you don't break more than one plane. You know, you, like we had said, that it's all isolation. So you're staying in one plane. You're either doing bicep curls and staying in that sagittal plane, or you're doing lateral raises, staying in that frontal. I mean, you could even be doing sit and twists or something, and you're kind of going into that trans, but it's never more than one. Where, as in performance training, if you can incorporate more planes, you're going to make, one, your body awareness a lot higher, and two, you're going to train your body to learn how to, I guess, learn how to do typical movements in an unconventional way.
Yeah. I'm going to jump in on that with performance athletes. They'll be doing, more often than not, you can only move your body really one plane at a time, typically. No matter really which direction you're going in one of the three planes. But as you get more accustomed to your body and in tune with your body, you can actually manipulate your body in two planes at a time. It'd be impossible to do all three unless you were contorting your body in weird ways. But typically you could do one plane of movement. So let's say you're in terms of running or movement. So running, sagittal plane is forward and back. So forward run, back pedals. If you're going laterally, which is frontal plane, it's a side shuffle to the side or to the left or right. And then transverse is just really all it is, just twisting your body. So let's say you're in the middle of a dodge and you wanted to, actually no, let me back that. If you wanted to do a throw requires, I think, only two plays of motion. So it's sagittal because you're taking that forward step, and transverse because you are twisting your torso going from, I guess, facing to your right. If you're a right-handed thrower, you face to your right, and then you're twisting your chest towards your opponent. So that's a transverse motion because your torso is doing a lot of rotation in the middle of that movement. So that's one of the exercises or movements that can do two planes of motion at a time. But there's not very many other movements that you can do two. But if you can figure out a way to incorporate your body to move through more than one plane of motion at a time, you'll be able to control your body better. Dodging will definitely improve. your coordination, your awareness, a lot of different things will definitely skyrocket if you can manipulate that in your training.
Yeah, and like you said, body awareness is crucial in dodgeball. You know, how many times you get up in the air and realize that, you know, you let one foot lag behind, where if you have that body awareness and realize where you are in space, then you're tucked up tight and you're dodging more balls. Or, you know, you're so focused on the ball that's coming towards your face that you forget to move your feet for the second throw. It's just anything that can give you that leg up in body awareness or proprioception. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
That it helps to do it in a controlled environment several times to understand the movement and become good at it. So that way when you express it on the court and it's uncontrolled and you don't know exactly what's going to happen next, that it's easier to
replicate.
Nah, not the word I was looking for, but I mean, I guess, yes, it's easier to replicate that. But it's easier to mold back into your training where you say, okay, I've done this movement before. It's similar to this, you know, I know where my body's at. And you have something to relate it to.
Yeah, definitely agreed. Oh, that reminds me of a okay. So when it comes to proprioception, a lot of it is related to balance training and unstable conditioning. So this reminds me of a video I saw. I want to say he was a skier or some type of winter sports athlete where he had to go through a whole room of obstacles, and they were all different, like, stability exercise. Well, not really exercise, but like stability platform that he had to go through. So like he would go through a slack line. He would have to go then hop onto an upside down Bosu. Then you'd have to jump onto a foam roller, walk on top of the foam roller without touching the ground. And then a whole bunch of other exercises. Now, is that a little bit on the extreme side? And only professionals should probably do that? Yes. But those are kind of some ways where you can train your body to adapt. And that's where proprioception is probably at its peak. Because, again, he's going through probably one range of motion through most of that. But because your core is working really hard, he has to work and transfer and resisting his body rotating in a way that he doesn't want it to. So there's a lot of different planes that he was going through right there. So if you can, again, think of different exercises, think of different ways to train your body to go through things that, I mean, in a training setting, you're going to be prepared for it. But let's say in a game setting where if you have to make a movement that's very similar, like Brett said, you can kind of backtrack to what you did in training and then manipulate it into a game setting.
Yeah. And if you're going to start working on, you know, that type of balance training, start slow, then take small steps. So like just start with maybe a foam pad on the ground and just something that, you know, it gives you a little bit of a lean. If you lean one way, you might lose it where it's not as stable as concrete or the gym floor or whatever you're standing on, and work your way up. I mean, there's no need to rush it. There's no need to end up getting hurt and backtracking, you know, 3-6 months because you wanted to try to stand up straight on an exercise ball. I mean, there's just no need for it. And it's the risk versus reward at that point is very low.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I would say don't do it without someone that's trained. We really never actually trained in those types of exercises, but like at least that knows what they're doing. And even if they don't know what they're doing, have someone at least there spotting you. So if you do fall, they can minimize the amount of impact you have on the floor. Because like you said, you see plenty of those videos where some dumb person just jumps on a stability ball, like you stand on this thing and then they eat the floor hard or other dumb things. Like there's videos of different people doing different things. They're always dumb.
You could even start as easy as something as do your bicep curls in a split stance and then go from a split stance to on one foot. I mean, those things are easily, you know, those will be some of the more beneficial ways to do it because you're creating more of those neural pathways, and you know, you have to be balancing, so you're gonna incorporate your core while you're doing another movement. So it's training your body to start thinking about more of that body awareness while you're doing something that's fairly easy.
Exactly. Like if you think about your body as a base, your 2 feet are a base. That's probably the most stable position you'll ever be standing in. If you go single leg, so let's say you were doing like skater hop where you jump side to side from 1 foot to the other. If you were trying to do it with the balance aspect, try to jump out to your side. Let's say you jump out to your right foot as far as you can, land, and then try to keep your body still the second you land. And you'd be surprised at how difficult that is if you're jumping out to the side as far as you can, because all of that momentum is going to carry you over your right foot. So you could do training like that where it's more of a plyometric exercise than jump training, but mm-hmm. jump training is also a proprioceptive exercise because you got to be aware of how you're landing, how much power you're putting into it, what the next movement is if you're going to make it a compound movement or a two-step process movement. So there's a lot of different things that you can go with that.
Right. And to tie this all back full circle, bodybuilding doesn't do any of this. Bodybuilding is all, you know, that isolation a million times with a light weight to try to just blow that muscle up. And it's like every muscle they're trying to use is just like a bike pump. You're just trying to put more and more and more into the muscle, not what can you get out of it. Or the proprioception is not a thing for bodybuilders. It's just not something.
They probably wouldn't know what it is.
I would hope so. I'd hope they have a little bit of education behind their training. Not just do what my trainer says, but I definitely have met those people that, you know, they're like a, just like a training robot where you just input information, they do it, and then they come out and don't even think about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, I know some people are smart what they're doing, but like when it comes to certain terms, I know they're not going to know it because like, not that I'm going to say like, I don't want to say bodybuilders are dumb, but like a lot of them are kind of meatheads.
Are you stereotyping? Am I included in this?
No, you're good. You're one of the few. But I would say like a lot of them, like if you go to like the average bodybuilder, especially if they've never had like formal training for it, a lot of them are just meatheads. They just go in, they do it. It's a lot of trial and error, and they may be smart by what they've learned from, again, trial and error, but they may not have taken classes on what certain things are, or they may have heard certain things from just their friends, but they never really looked it up on how to improve or how to or what really anything of this means, or like kind of like, you get what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. Somebody told them that they'd probably make a good bodybuilder and then just kept doing what they were doing, and all that they really worried about was dialing in their diet before a show. I've met plenty of those people.
Exactly. So like a lot of them just kind of just do it just to do it. They don't really have a lot of mindset behind it, which is nothing wrong with that. I mean, I know some people are really good at doing what they're doing, and some people are just have been doing it for so long that it's just like, well, I don't really need to know specific keywords. I need to know what I need to feel, what I need to work on, how to work on it, and then just go on from there. And if it works, I'm not going to knock it if it works. So,
Yeah. And it's funny because even though you're sitting here talking about all the stereotypes, it definitely fits. There's so many people, even pros that can't tell you a lot about the body, but you know, that's why they pay a coach, because then they don't have to think about it. It's just one less thing on their plate that, you know, my coach tells me what I need to do, tells me where I'm lacking, where I need to be working harder, and then I just do it. And yeah, I think
the same thing could go to athletes too. I mean, like performance athletes, because
yeah,
a lot of them just, again, like from like whatever age you started your sport to where you're at now, it's been coach told me this, coach told me this, coach told me this. And some people can kind of figure out what it, like the meaning behind it is, or some people remember what their coaches say. But even like, let's say you started a high school coach, most of them like you go based off their experience in college or high school. They never really study weightlifting. They never really study how to train people. They kind of just do it based on what they think is good or their personal experience. They don't really like study the knowledge behind it. So same thing with going into college. Now, usually I'm hoping most college trainers have knowledge of what they're doing. But even then, like the athletes usually don't care. They just go in, do what they're told. Some of them that do care might talk to the creators about it, but they might ask questions like, oh, how can I get better at this? How can I do this better? And those are usually the athletes that are standing apart from the others, but they may not know the knowledge behind it. And so not that I'm knocking bodybuilding, but I've met more bodybuilders that don't know what they're doing, like knowledge-wise.
Oh, knock them. Knock those bodybuilders. They're up on some high horses. You need to bring them down a peg or two.
Oh, I think they know.
No, actually, that brings up a good point. I was listening to a Stanford's strength and conditioning coach, Corey Schlesinger. He's a great follow on Instagram if you don't follow him. He was talking about how, you know, that strength and conditioning is getting less and less time with athletes, especially with like something like a pandemic. So that's usually the first thing that gets cut, and how he's tried to adapt to those, adapt to that adversity, and how he's incorporating more of like, different styles of dynamic warmups, where he's almost made sure that a warmup is more like a small hit session, and then goes right from there to, you know, the compound lift of the day. And then really it's all right, whatever you guys want to do, because you have to overcome that. And it's, you know, it's skipping, I don't want to say the boring parts, but all those warm-ups, like running laps and doing like high knees and things like that, are things that, you know, athletes have no interest in. I mean, especially, sorry, college athletes, but
yeah, no,
how you are
one of them. Nope.
Yeah. And he was talking about how it really gets, you know, athletes more engaged quickly, and, you know, it gets blood flowing quicker. So, you know, like I said, give him a follow, good guy to listen to talk, hear him talk and hear some of his philosophies on, training athletes. So,
yeah, I definitely agree. And I would say, what was I going to say? I think it had something to do with like the warm-ups aspect. Like, I remember in high school, all they did was laps for a warm-up, and then doing all those high knees, all those other drills. Like, I think that would apply more for like a practice versus training session. And what the difference is, like, when you're doing practice, you're usually going through drills, you're going through game-like simulations, you're going through gameplay scenarios, you're doing all these things that require that type of movements. Mm-hmm. And you need to be probably, not, I don't want to say properly warmed up, but you need to be, I would guess, more pumped up for your work or your practice. Yeah. Now, when it comes to training, it's a little bit different because you don't need to run like a mile before practice or before your training session, because that's just going to wipe you out. So if you can get like a 5-minute hit session to get you really going and get your body pumped and ready to go, I think that's a little bit more beneficial to warm up. Especially if you're going through range of motion, you're going through mobility exercises, you're going through explosive movements prior to you doing heavy weight or whatever your training session entails for that day, I think that's a better.
Yeah, something that stretches your range of motion while also making sure that you're getting blood into that muscle so that it's not cold once you start trying to stress it more.
Yeah, exactly. Don't ever warm up cold, or don't ever work out cold, people. Don't just jump into a workout because that's not how you hurt yourself. So please don't do it. Warm up.
Not only will you hurt yourself, but you're wasting time, really. You're wasting time because you're not going to get to a good set until set 3 or 4. Yeah. You know, if you get a good warm up in, you can do 2 sets and be good. Like get a solid warm up in. And nice dynamic, get blood flowing, you know, get blood in that muscle. Say you're working out chest, you know, get blood in that muscle. And then you can jump right into like a working set. And you don't have to take those first couple sets to feel the bar or whatever. You can jump right in. And then you're on and off that bench in 10, 15 minutes versus people that sit on there for a half hour.
Yeah. Oh, man. don't even remind me. I haven't been in a gym forever, but those people hurt me, man.
But yeah, man, I mean, I don't have anything else on this. I know we stayed more on the performance athlete side, and you know, we made a few comparisons to bodybuilding, but I mean, once you get past, like we said, that you get past that level where bodybuilders are just kind of floating back and forth when, and athletes are taking that next step, it's really hard to compare them because it's just something that it's not on bodybuilding or bodybuilders radars.
Yeah, I think it's just two very different, I don't want to say styles, but just two different worlds. Like bodybuilding, like when, like you said, like the first couple of like stages that they're in training, very similar. Once they get to a certain aspect of stages, then that's where performance athletes kind of split off. So It's a very different, which I guess that world of, I guess, athletics. You could technically call them both athletes, but they're usually competing in something. So it's kind of like, I'm trying to think of two different sports. Comparing football
to
like swimming, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just weird because bodybuilding is really the only sport, I mean, that I can think of that is judged on what one person thinks of as being like, it's a judgment call. It's not like in sports where it's points and it's very clear and defined. It's something that's a little bit kind of.
Yeah. I mean, there are plenty of other sports. Like there's weird. What's it called? There's ice skating that's judged. There's gymnastics, like any of those, like rhythm dance.
Well, even those have ones. They have moves that are, that have difficulty, and they have, you know, combinations that are different difficulty ranks. And I mean, being that I came from swimming, I mean, different dives, yes, you either execute it or you don't, which is kind of a judgment call. But if you're going for something, it could be rated a 2.3 or a 1.8. I mean, yeah, but yeah, I don't know. It's just weird.
Yeah, let's say that's a whole different argument that probably won't need to ever get into because we're not qualified for any of those.
Right, but I mean, I don't have anything else I wanted to bring up unless you got something.
I feel like I had some, but I don't think it was important really, so I think we're good.
All right, we'll bring it up next episode. We'll make sure that I try to jog your memory before we get into our next topic.
That's fair. All
right. Cool, man. All right, well, if you guys aren't following us, if you guys aren't in the group, make sure that you do follow us on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. Make sure you're part of the Ball Out Squad Facebook group. Make sure you go check out the website. That is getting a facelift as we speak. Make sure that you're checking all of those consistently to see what else we got coming up, because we do have some big things coming up. This is episode 48. We have some big news for episode 50, so we'll drop that maybe in a week or so. So keep an eye out for that. And I think that's all I got.
Okay. All I got is product stuff. So that's coming up pretty soon. So got most of the manufacturers lined up. So now it's just a matter of time for the designing process for pretty much anything. I think all we're waiting now on is for shirts. So if you guys are interested in buying our products, be excited for that, because that's going to come up. Hopefully, I'm hoping by like early next week or like kind of later toward the end of the week next week. Hopefully that'll be lined up for next week, and then we'll get that stuff ready to go before Christmas, because that's the best time of the year.
Yeah. And like we said, drop some hints to teammates, you know, make sure that, you're coming out with your A squad. And I know it's been a long year off, but make sure people are getting back in the weight room, getting back to that peak dodgeball shape. Mm-hmm. So we can all come out guns blazing in 2021.
Okay. Maybe another year, maybe another 2 years, but when it happens, we'll be ready. So let's get started.
Don't say that.
I know. I know. I've been hearing that, man. I'm not happy about it either. But, fingers crossed it's 2021, not 22.
All right. I'm with you there. But if you're good, I'm good, Miles.
I'm good, man.
All right. Then we out.
Peace out, guys.